On a Monday, you're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're breaking down political developments one at a time. Here's a roadmap. We'll look at the leadership and handling of unemployment claims at the Department of Workforce Development as the governor forced the resignation of its secretary, Caleb Frostman, 10 days ago. We'll discuss the ruling on extending deadlines for clerks to handle absentee ballots. And we start with the statewide mask mandate. What questions do you have about the mask mandate and the governor's third state of emergency? Do you support it? How else would you like the governor and state lawmakers to address the threat of COVID? What do you think of a judge extending the deadline for mail-in ballots? We're at 800-642-1234. Laurel White is a state capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio and co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Well, let's look at this statewide mask mandate as we see our numbers just exploding here in Wisconsin. What did Governor Evers say was the need for the extension?
Well, the governor cited those increased case numbers across Wisconsin when he issued the new mask mandate and the new public health emergency. He said that we're entering a new and dangerous phase of the COVID-19 pandemic in Wisconsin. You know, he cited the spikes in cases that we've seen in university communities, in particular in Wisconsin, as schools have attempted to come back this fall and have in-person instruction, have students on campus. We know that different campuses have struggled with that to varying degrees, right? We've seen dorm quarantines. We've seen kind of temporary switches to virtual learning to try to figure out how to kind of grapple with maintaining an in-person community at these institutions and also keep the pandemic in check.
How have Republicans responded to the mask mandate extension? Because Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said in July that he had the votes to overturn the first emergency declaration and mask mandate.
He did. So we know that Republican lawmakers have not been big fans of the governor's mask mandates. They've said for, you know, several months, really since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic, almost the very beginning, the governor and Republican leaders have had disagreements about how to handle the pandemic. Republicans in general have favored a more kind of local approach, a more tailored approach for different communities in the state, depending on what the levels of the virus are there. Whereas the governor has pushed more of these statewide plans, things like his safer at home order, the stay at home order that we saw over the spring. So Republican lawmakers have pushed back, saying the mask mandate, statewide orders in general, just aren't the way that the state should be going. And they had really, really strong responses this time to the order. They put out statements very quickly after the governor acted and didn't mince words. Both Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss called the order illegal. And we can get into kind of the legal challenges to the mask mandate, of course. There's an ongoing lawsuit there. But they also said things like, you know, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said that he believed that the mandate and the public health emergency weren't worth the paper that they were printed on. So they've really reached a level of frustration, I think, with the governor that we haven't seen before.
But are Republicans divided on mask wearing? They have the majority to end the governor's state of emergency and the mask mandate.
And they're choosing not to do that. So what has to happen if the legislature wants to override any public health emergency or any other state of emergency that a governor declares, they just have to come in, convene the legislature, and have a two-thirds simple majority vote in both chambers of the state legislature. So Republicans obviously have that simple majority in both chambers. As you mentioned, the Senate said earlier this year that they were willing to come in and override the mask mandate, but the Assembly has never gotten on board with that. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has never said that there's the appetite, that there are the votes there among Republicans to override the mask mandate. And notably, Senator Fitzgerald was even silent coming in for an override right now. So there is certainly political disagreement among Republicans about the override, or at the very least, a political calculation about how it would look for lawmakers to do that, any sort of political ramifications of them doing that ahead of the November election. All of the 99 state assembly seats are on the ballot in November. So any vote that lawmakers would take about a mask mandate would be on voters'
On the
minds when they
record.
go, absolutely, on the record when they go to vote.
Laurel White is WPR State Capitol reporter. We're breaking down the latest news in state government and politics with you as well. What would you like to see lawmakers working on amid the pandemic? What do you want to be done about the surge of COVID cases in Wisconsin, especially ahead of Election Day? It's 800-642-1234. Laurel, last week, Judge William Conley extended the amount of time mail-in ballots can be accepted for the general election. What did Judge Conley say was the reason for the extension?
Said that he weighed the experience that Wisconsin voters had in the April presidential primary, and in his view, it is necessary to extend those deadlines to make sure that some folks aren't disenfranchised in the election process this year because of the COVID-19 pandemic. He said because of the conditions that people are living under during the pandemic, kind of trying to navigate their comfort levels with being out in public, interacting with others. He said that it's just essential to kind of change state laws for this period of time related to elections to make sure that people are able to participate basically in the democratic process.
So what does that mean logistically then for the election?
So right now, technically, this order is on hold. So it means nothing as of right now. The way things are playing out, nothing has changed at the moment because Judge Conley's decision has been appealed to a higher court. That court has stayed it, meaning put it on hold while it's waiting to hear arguments. With that being said, if kind of that process plays out and Judge Conley's order is allowed to go back into effect, it would give Wisconsinites 6 additional days after Election Day for their ballot to make its way to local election officials, to their local clerk after November 3rd, after Election Day, as long as the ballot was postmarked by November 3rd. So it's kind of accounting for folks who might get their ballot in the mail a little bit later than election officials are recommending this year, or if there are mishaps, problems with the mail, delays with the mail that make it take even longer than some people are anticipating, kind of just builds in a buffer for mail-in ballots. It would also extend, Judge Conley's order would also extend online voter registration in Wisconsin. Right now, the deadline is October 14th to register online to vote. Under his order, it would be October 21st, just kind of extending that out so people don't need to go into their local clerk's office to register in person, or they don't need to register in person on election day. That is something that's offered in Wisconsin, but Judge Conley said that takes time. Of course, when people are there, additional time to do that in-person registration, and he said we want to do what we can to mitigate the amount of time that people are going to be in
And
polling places in person if possible.
Laurel, who is behind this appeal?
So this is Republican state lawmakers that have appealed this decision to the Seventh Circuit in Chicago. They think that Wisconsin election laws are sufficient to make sure that everybody can vote in November.
WPR's State Capitol reporter Laurel White is our guide to the Capitol in the latest political news, election news. Have you filed for unemployment amid the pandemic? What was the process like? What do you think of Governor Evers firing the Department of Workforce Secretary over the backlog of claims? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more State Cap with Laurel White here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new state audit report found 93% of calls to our state unemployment call centers between mid-March and the end of June were blocked or callers got a business signal. And Governor Evers ousted Department of Workforce Development Secretary Caleb Frostman 10 days ago. What do you want to know about the changes at the top of DWD? What's your experience with the unemployment insurance benefit system? Also, have you attended any campaign rallies or visits? How do you think our state will impact the presidential race and election? Be part of this 800-642-1234. Laurel White is WPR State Capitol reporter, and she stays with us. Laurel, let's look at what happened in DWD. We had 10 days ago a governor asking for Caleb Frostman's resignation. Why was that?
So the governor cited that sustained backlog of unfilled unemployment insurance claims in Wisconsin when he announced that Secretary Frostman was stepping down at his request. This is something that has gotten headlines in Wisconsin since the beginning of the pandemic. You mentioned the new audit that came out last week that outlined the number of folks that were calling the unemployment office and not able to get through to discuss claims. The governor essentially said it was unacceptable that the backlog had lasted this long. We're talking, you know, a large number of people that have been affected. As of the time that Secretary Frostman stepped down, the latest numbers from DWD had about 700,000 unfilled weekly claims for unemployment insurance in Wisconsin. And some of those claims had been submitted, had been pending for quite a while, sometimes months. So the governor said it was just essential at this point in his belief to kind of change leadership at the top to get this problem addressed.
Do you think the audit was really the impetus for this change at the top?
The governor didn't cite the audit. The governor's office, didn't mention anything like that specifically. The audit, of course, didn't come out until late last week. Secretary Frostman's resignation and the announcement came several days before that. But there is a potential that played a role. The Department of Workforce Development is given an opportunity to respond, or any department that has an audit like this gets the results and they're able to respond before it's published as kind of part of the process. So it's possible that within the Evers administration, it was known that this was coming, and that was something that factored into the governor's decision.
And who will replace Frostman as the head of the Department of Workforce Development?
So someone that's currently, already part of state government, already part of the process, a different department. It's a deputy secretary within the State Department of Corrections, Amy Pahacek. She's going to step in and take over the leadership role in an interim capacity until Governor Evers decides who he wants to nominate to fill the position in a permanent way. It is a Senate-confirmed position, so it's somebody that's going to be up for, debate and conversation among the Republican-controlled legislature. We know that that's something that's been very contentious in the past, the governor's picks to lead certain departments, and certainly this one is under a microscope and has been for a while. So we'll have to keep a close eye on how that plays out.
We're talking with Laurel White, who covers the state capitol for WPR. Your insights as well at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Kathy now. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi, what would you like to add?
Well, the backlog was true. It took me until the mid-July to get any kind of benefits. And it was mainly because I was considered a gig worker. I'm a substitute teacher. And I was working full-time up until March 16th. After I was put in adjudication, then I still had nothing. So I contacted Tammy Baldwin. And Tammy's office got things rolling within probably 2 weeks of contacting her. Someone did call me. I had already emailed numerous times. I called 174 times in 3 days, but finally someone called me. But the funny thing is, after I got my benefits, they started sending me letters saying I owed them money.
Oh, wow.
I was like, they said they overpaid me. Now, my payment was $110 a week. That's what they just determined I was going to get. And then they would come back and say, well, now you owe us $40. It was a bit ridiculous.
For all the time that you put into that. Kathy, thank you for sharing that story. And, you know, Laurel, a couple things there. Kathy contacted U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin.
That is absolutely something that individuals other than Kathy, other folks did the same thing. You know, when former Secretary Frostman first testified before state lawmakers about this problem, he was called into a committee meeting to talk about what was going wrong and how they were working to address it. He said that members of staff and himself, other people at DWD were getting calls not only to their work phones and messages to their work emails, but people were finding their personal phone numbers and calling their personal cell phones and leaving messages because people were just so frustrated and scared because it was taking so long for them to get claims filled and get their questions answered about problems. You know, they go into the adjudication process, like Kathy mentioned, and that can be for any number of reasons, you know, disputes about how you left your last job or hours worked, a number of technical things. And some people were concerned about, you know, why they were in that process or how long it was taking. And so they were really kind of using whatever avenue they could, reaching out to whoever they could to get some action, to get some answers.
Let's bring in Bill now from Pewaukee. Hi, Bill.
Hi there.
Hi, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for being there, and Ms. White, for keeping on top of so many kinds of things. The question, I have a lot on my mind, but the question I called in about was, I think I heard the other day that the legislature had not met for, was it 120 days or even more than that? And I'm wondering if that's normal. It just seems like the Republicans are just kind of laying low until the election and kind of doing nothing.
Bill, thank you. Laurel, is this normal for the legislature to be out of session this long?
It is. So especially in an election year like this, it is not uncommon for the legislature to wrap up in the spring with their business for the year and kind of shift into campaign mode and basically, you know, kind of have lawmakers move from their positions at the Capitol back to their districts, having these one-on-one kind of interactions with voters ahead of November. It's not unusual for that to happen. I think what's unusual this year is everything that's happening in 2020. Obviously, the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, unrest and racial tensions over police shootings and racial inequality in Wisconsin. There have been multiple things that have brought folks' attention to the fact that lawmakers aren't in the Capitol right now passing new laws and debating proposals. And
right, because Governor Evers called a special session 5 weeks ago with 9 bills that were proposed in early June, but he didn't call a special session at that time following George Floyd's death. What about these special sessions?
So lawmakers essentially say that the leaders, the Republican leaders, are saying that they need more time to look at these proposals, that they want to go through a task force process where things are discussed and debated and there's more time to work on finding bipartisan consensus on bills. The governor, on the other hand, and Democrats say that they know what the issues are. Wisconsin has had a long time to talk about these things. There are some clear things that can be done right away, things like banning police use of chokeholds and no-knock warrants. Republican leaders have actually said they think they have the votes for the chokehold ban. So it's just a very basic disagreement about how quickly should move right now. Republicans think that things need more time. They want to come back at the beginning of the next legislative session, which begins in January. That's when the new lawmakers are sworn in after the election. They want to come in then, handle things then. The governor and Democrats want things done right now.
Very quickly, before I have to let you go, Vice President Mike Pence was in our state again last week. President Trump will be in Duluth on Wednesday. Do we know if these campaign visits are having an impact on Wisconsin voters?
That's such an interesting question, Kate, and that's something that we're really keeping a close eye on. According to the latest Marquette poll, voters in Wisconsin aren't changing their views too much over the course of this campaign. We had really high-profile visits from President Trump and candidate Joe Biden in the wake of everything that happened in Kenosha. And their popularity rates in Wisconsin didn't really budge from before they made those visits to after. So it's really interesting to see just kind of how strong Wisconsin is right now in its division and in its beliefs about individual candidates. We're not seeing a lot of wiggle room as of right now. So we're going to keep a real close eye on it and see if, you know, as these visits evolve, if they change anybody's mind.
Laurel, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is the State Capitol reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. She co-hosts the WPR Politics podcast. Coming up, the State Capitol Report continues with Representative Sheila Stubbs. She's co-chairing this Speaker's Task Force to address racial disparities in our state. How do Wisconsin's racial disparities affect you or your community? 800-642-1234. We'll be back with more State Cap after this news update on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You have a line to State Representative Sheila Stubbs of Madison. She is co-chair of a new task force in the Assembly to address racial disparities and police policies and standards following the police shooting of Jacob Blake last month. Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke was tapped to lead this task force as well. We spoke with him on Labor Day.
Be clear that the task force is going to have less legislators and more people from communities of color throughout the state working with law enforcement to come up with these solutions.
What would you like to see state lawmakers do to address racial disparities and police brutality? What laws, reforms, or initiatives do you support? We're at 800-642-1234. Representative Sheila Stubbs is a Democrat representing Wisconsin's 77th Assembly District in Madison. Representative Stubbs, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Welcome back. Thank you, Kate. I'm excited to get this honorable opportunity to speak with you again.
Well, Representative, why did you decide to co-chair this task force?
Thank you so much for such a great question. Well, I'm excited to be the co-chair of the Task Force on Racial Disparities. And I'm excited to be able to work with my fellow lawmakers, especially Representative Steinke, who is the other co-chair, and community leaders to truly address the many racial disparities in the state of Wisconsin. I'm very grateful that Representative Voss, our Speaker Voss, actually appointed me to this task force. And let's be clear, it is time that we really stand up and address the inequities that exist across the state of Wisconsin. We know, in fact, Wisconsin is the absolute worst state to raise a black family, and that is shameful, that is unacceptable, and we must go to work. We know that 7% of Wisconsin population is black, but account for 44% of black people in prison. The four-year graduation rate is almost 25% lower for black high school students compared to their white counterparts. It is unacceptable. And I've heard as I've gone throughout the state and I've done the marches and I've done the peaceful protests that people want less talk and more action. And that's why I'm excited to sit at the table in leadership and get something done.
So, as you've said, the state is in crisis. The task force was announced a few weeks ago. What progress has your group made?
Well, thank you. Actually, from the moment that Representative Steinke and I actually met together and talked at the press conferences, we began to start getting just a large number of people who have applied to be on the task force. I know for sure that he and I have worked on some of the logistics. We've talked about, you know, when are we going to actually do our first meeting? Who's going to be on this task force? We spent time. I mean, I've had so many people call me personally and through the cell phone and at the office. To check and see what can be done. We certainly made sure that people could send their letters of resume and letters of interest to our task force. We knew that nominations were accepted until Friday, last week, September 18th. We do know the size and makeup of this task force is going to be between 15 and 20 people, between 4 to 5 legislators, between 15 community leaders, organizers, faith-based groups, and not-for-profits. Our timeline Our first meeting should be about the second or third week in October. And the plan is to have the legislation for the criminal justice drafted and ready for introduction at the start of the session, which would also include the previous legislation. So we are getting started. We are going through a lot of the applications. We're starting that this week. Representative Steinicke and I, and I've been told that there is a lot of interest. I believe that because people have written my office. And so hopefully within the next couple of weeks, there will be an announcement of who's actually going to be on the task force.
So, Representative, is this task force really focused on putting together legislative package? Is it focused on the bills in particular? Because Governor Evers, he called a special session 5 weeks ago and put forth 9 bills way back in June following George Floyd's death. What is this task force going to be doing?
Absolutely. Well, one of the main goals of the task force is to address and to recognize racism as what it is. Racism is a public health crisis that is only worsening under COVID-19 and the civil unrest following the murder of George Floyd and the shooting of Jacob Blake. It is time for elected officials in this country to get to work and pass comprehensive reforms. All eyes are on Wisconsin legislation. It is our duty to come to the table. I hope that the task force represents a new era of bipartisanship and reform. We owe this to our community, especially communities of color in Wisconsin that have been marginalized and systematically oppressed for far too long. We must commit to implementing solutions that they need. The governor has done so much. Governor Evers and Lieutenant Governor Barnes certainly introduced 9 bills that the Wisconsin Legislative Black Caucus agreed to. And let me share this with you. I'm honored to say one of those bills is a bill that I co-author, which is the unnecessarily summoning of a police officer, which dealt with my 2018 incident for racial profiling. I am glad that that's before us. But let me be very clear. We are under the Republican leadership. We cannot pass these bills without the Republicans coming to the table. And so I am calling out leadership to bring these bills to a debate and to vote. We must do that. And that's why I'm going to push as much as I can within these next couple of months to make sure we look at those 9 bills that Governor Evers has introduced, national best practices throughout the country, other bills that have been introduced in the state capitol that never moved out of committee or never was placed in committee. Take all these different bills, look at them, draft the best reform, and let me be clear, there's going to be compromise at the table. There's going to be negotiations at the table. But we must walk out of that room with consensus to put forth the best legislation that we can to address police brutality, to address health inequities, to address education, to address the well-being of someone. So I look at this as a framework to begin to address the inequities, and we must pass the bill that creates the Office of Equity and Inclusion that I authored with Senator Taylor, because that is the real work that needs to be done across the state of Wisconsin.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Representative Sheila Stubbs, who is leading a bipartisan task force to look at Wisconsin's racial disparities. What actions would close the racial wealth gap? How do we improve educational outcomes? What do you want to see out of this task force? Share your experience, your insights, 800-642-1234. Representative Stubbs, some protesters have asked for police funding to be reduced. Your Republican colleagues have proposed legislation that would penalize local governments for doing this. Is there some common ground on how to address policing and police budgets?
You know, what I'm really excited to say about this is that, you know, in the Capitol, Republicans and Democrats, we couldn't get it together. We couldn't come to a consensus. And so now it's going to take the outside influencers to come into the Capitol, sit at the table, and then tell us what needs to be done. And it is time for us as lawmakers to listen to our community, those that represent us. I am hopeful that we will come to some consensus because we have more outsiders, more faith-based and not-for-profit organizers coming into that space, even those that have protested. Grassroots organizers into the space and less elected officials. And so I think because we're getting to the table and we are really going to address the crucial issues that need to be addressed that have never happened before. And so I think that we are going to get there. I think that it is time that lawmakers listen to elected, that lawmakers listen to our community, and that our community drive the outcomes of these bills. And I truly believe that we will truly address inequities. You know, I hear people say defund. I hear people say divest. I've heard the word reinvest. I've heard the word re-envision. At the end of the day, law enforcement cannot continue in the capacity that they are. We've got to come together. At the end of the day, if I'm out in the community, I want to return back home. I truly believe law enforcement want to return back home, but we've got to get to the table and find our consensus.
Let's take a call now. Troy is joining us from Muskego. Hi, Troy.
Hello. I know I received my education probably, you know, about 15 years ago from the UW system, and it was interesting because I had to take a lot of Native American, background, history type classes for diversity and that, but there was nothing for African Americans. I really do believe whether you're going to school for like a formal degree, or you're going to like for a trade, or even just owning a business in the state of Wisconsin, you definitely should have to take some kind of something that explains systemic racism in Milwaukee, know the history. I think that's where a lot of this stuff comes from, is a lot of misinformation that people get from growing up in a very segregated city.
Troy, thank you for the call. Representative Stubbs, what do you see on education here?
Great. I think first and foremost, the caller is absolutely right. First and foremost, we're going to spend a significant amount of time educating those in the room, educating ourselves. And what I really like about this makeup is you cannot fully address what's happening to a sector of people if they're not in the room, if they're missing from the table. And so to have basically that group comprised of the task force comprised of people of color, from the Latina to the Native American to the Black, that are in the room talking about themselves. For one, we are experts at what we do. I know about racial disparities. I know about being profiled, and I can bring that experience to that room. That's a lived experience. I am a victim of it. And what we're going to do is train people who don't know about it. And that's why we need that Office of Equity and Inclusion, so we can actually begin to address the perceptions and address the biases and begin to tell people, yeah, you have unconscious bias. And we began to talk about the necessary trainings that we need people to learn about the history. Because if you don't know the history, you are doomed to repeat it. That's why this task force is going to be so critical, because we're going to educate law enforcement. I forgot to share that. That's a part of the makeup of the task force, public health. People that may have never really understood why a person of color have this fear of what happens, why we are treated differently. So sitting at the table for the first time, listen to someone who has experienced that is going to definitely bring some change in that space.
State Representative Sheila Stubbs is with us. We will be back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Representative Sheila Stubbs. She's a Democrat from Madison who's co-chairing this new Speaker's Task Force on Racial Disparities, Educational Opportunities, Public Safety, and Police Policies and Standards. And meanwhile, at the beginning of this month, the largest police union in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Professional Police Association, it unveiled a set of 24 legislative proposals tied to police reform. And the union hopes lawmakers will take up the package. Representative, looking at the proposal from the association, 24 proposals put out by the Wisconsin Professional Police Association, what will the task force do with this?
Great. So what the task force will be doing is looking at any proposals that have been introduced. The Wisconsin Professional Police Association bills, the 9 common sense bills that Governor Evers, Lieutenant Governor Barnes, and the Democrats put forward, which should have passed, but reality is that did not happen. Any bills that any other legislators have introduced in the state capitol, and look at national best practices across the United States and come to the table, look at each of those bills, find where we can agree, And where we can agree, we'll move forward and put together a list of bills. And like I said, our goal would be to introduce it at the beginning of our session in January or February and try and get those bills passed first as a consensus across the state. But it's really important that any bills that are out there that's impacting police brutality or no-knock warrants, for an example, or profiling, let's sit down and let's look at them and let's make sure that we can come up with what best represents our community, law enforcement, public health, not-for-profits, grassroots, faith-based, and then that will be the bills that we put forward.
Let's bring in Isaac now, who's joining us from McFarland. Hi, Isaac. What would you like to add?
I have a comment. We give police a lot of power, and even power to kill in some cases, but there's very little accountability and transparency that goes with that power. So the laws that govern the, how police us need to change. So who is policing the police? For example, we have conceal and carry laws. Republicans champion that. They like it. But, for example, if you face a police officer and you announce that you have a weapon with you, in some cases you get killed.
Isaac, I want to pause there and allow Representative Stubbs to address that. You know, Isaac asks, who is policing the police? Isaac is seeking more transparency and accountability.
Absolutely. And I think that's a real candid conversation that would be a natural conversation with this task force, because you're going to have grassroots organized. You're going to have victims. You're going to have faith-based where people with lived experience with law enforcement is going to say, we don't trust you. How do we build trust? If people don't trust you, it doesn't matter what you put together, it's going to fail. So what we have to do is begin to build trust in that space with those major organizers in that room. I think number two is one of our bills that will look at the standard law enforcement standard boards and look and see about transparency. I agree with you 100%, Isaac. Transparency must be there. We must hold people accountable. They need to actually follow the law. And I do believe right now that people see that, law enforcement is at a place where people don't trust. And trust is something that can be broken. And we are in a pivotal time in our country that we have to go back to the table and find our common ground. And that's why I think this task force is so critical at this pivotal moment, that we will come in that room, put our politics to the side, and go to work for the people across the state of Wisconsin.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Sheila Stubbs, who represents District 77 in the State Assembly, talking about the new task force addressing racial disparities. What would you like to share with a state lawmaker? What would you like to see lawmakers do to address police brutality, racial disparities, inequities in financial aspects? 800-642-1234. I want to circle back to something you said at the top, in that the median annual income of a Black family here in Wisconsin is less than half of a white family in Wisconsin. How would you like the task force to look at systemic financial inequities?
Great. First of all, we have to look at our systems. We have to look at our practices. We have to look at policies. We must begin to build wealth, Black wealth, in the community. For example, in South Madison, the Urban League of Greater Madison, thanks to County Executive Parisi and the County Board, just put $2 million to building the Sherman Phoenix model that's in Milwaukee into Madison to focus on Black-owned businesses, women-owned businesses, a micro-business concept, and began to give people that helping hand, because no one wants to just go and get something for free. But we want to meet people where they are. We want to begin to look at banks, make sure that the loaning process is more equitable. And that's the only way we're going to get there. We have to be creative in our thinking. We have to look at innovation. And it's okay to duplicate a model somewhere else in the country that is working. And then, like I said, be creative about your own space and make sure that happens. And so this committee will have some of the people from the banking industry or You know, they could be with other experts in that room, and that's the other part of that task force I forgot to illuminate, to share about, is making sure that we talk about other experts that might be invited into that space to help us with those really difficult conversations.
You know, sometimes people hear task force and they roll their eyes and say, another task force, that means nothing's going to happen. Is this different this time, do you think, Representative Stubbs?
Absolutely. I am very optimistic. You know, I wake up every morning, I set an agenda. I don't always get things done the way that I want to, but I'm hopeful. Long as I have hope, I can get through the day. I would not waste my time to do something that was not meaningful. I am taking a very serious step to sit at that table in leadership and move forward the agenda. Let me be very clear. Of the 9 bills that included banning police chokeholds, no-knock warrants, requiring police to announce themselves before executing on search warrants, increased transparency and officer-involved shooting, other incidences, and the racial profiling by proxy were just some of the bills, but those were common-sense bills. And for some reason, my Republican colleagues did not want to pass those bills, did not want to have the debate. Well, now I have been a big critic of them. And when they ask me to come to the table, I'm going to come to the table because my beliefs, my values, and as a victim of profiling and as a Democrat and as someone who represents, you know, one of the 99 reps across the state of Wisconsin, my voice is critical. I will bring the community voice, and I am hopeful that we will come to a consensus in that space and walk out with some bills that need to become law across the state. I don't want to see another Jacob Blake. I don't want to meet a Breonna Taylor. I don't. There are cases across the state right now that we haven't even heard of or can be taking place. We don't want any more victims. We don't want any more peaceful protesters killed. So we must go to work across the state of Wisconsin. And I know me sitting at that table, something will be done. And I agree. I've heard people say, we don't want any more task force. We don't want any more commissions and committees. We demand action. This is the only next step that we have at the state capitol. That's why I'm invested. It is the only next step. Governor Evers couldn't do it with Lieutenant Governor Barnes. The Democrats can do it. The only way we're going to get something done is to sit at the table with Republicans, and I'm honored to sit at that table and to get something done for every Wisconsinite across the state of Wisconsin.
And we only have a few seconds left, but I want to ask you about extending the statewide mask mandate. Do you support the strategy to address COVID-19, which is just exploding in numbers here in Wisconsin?
Absolutely. I stood and supported the mandatory masking at Dane County. I'm also a Dane County Board Supervisor, so I did that with Executive Parisi. I've joined Governor Evers, and we've got to get control of COVID-19. And let's be very clear. Black and brown people are really dying quicker at COVID than other people. And this pandemic is killing so many people across our country and in our state. So whatever we can do to slow it down, we need to do it.
Representative Stubbs, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. I look forward to seeing you and hearing you again. And thank you again.
Thanks.
Opportunity.
Sheila Stubbs represents District 77 in the State Assembly. Just ahead, we discuss eye health with an ophthalmologist. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.